We made this.
Thank you for bringing us collectively to this moment. It is a moment that so many have dreamed of claiming. History starts today.
The guy you work for is an evil person.
I don't work for him. My firm works for him. Are you gonna behave yourself tomorrow?
I told you I'm gonna do my job.
I'm a reporter. I follow people that do not want to be followed.
What about the allegations that you recruit the most vulnerable for tests that end up killing people?
Your time to go.
You're finished, Mr. Brock.
Is that a threat?
You had to learn how to hide in plain sight. I'm pretty good at it. But you suck. Whoever you are.
I work at the Life Foundation, and I need your help. We found something. We call them symbiotes. Carlton Drake believes that the union between human and symbiote is the key to our evolution.
I'm feeling really sick.
I'm hearing a voice.
Eddie. You're not real. You were just in my head.
I'm gonna need Mr. Drake's property back.
I don't know.
Why would we do that?
If you're gonna stay, you will only hurt bad people.
The way I see it, we can do whatever we want. Do we have a deal?
Are you willing to sacrifice the one thing you hold most dear?
You should be extremely afraid.
What the hell are you?
We are Venom.
Podcast 616, a podcast all about the Marvel Universe for the We Made This Podcast Network. I am your host, Carpenter Lockwood, and in this episode we're going to be discussing the 2018 film Venom, featuring Tom Hardy as Eddie Brock and created by Sony Pictures. In the movie, Eddie Brock is an investigative journalist who soon gets fired from his job by trying to investigate the strange going on at the Life Foundation, who have discovered the existence of symbiotes, and it soon all goes to shit, really. The film follows Eddie as he discovers Venom, and Venom discovers him. And they try to save the world together. Joining me to discuss this episode is my guest, Robert Turnbull. Hello, Robert.
Hello, hi. Thank you so much for having me.
It's good to be doing an episode with you. How do the people know you? You know, what's your We Made This background, if you have any?
Yeah, I've got a little bit. So I'm currently co-hosting the You Have Been Watching podcast, all about UK sitcom, which is far more interesting, hopefully, than it sounds. And also, I've done a few of the other 616. I've done a couple of the reviews on here, a couple of the Real Talk retrospectives, and I'm kind of floating around, getting my fingers in more pies on the We Made This network. So, you know, stick my name in, and you'll probably find me popping up in random places.
Yeah, I'm of a similar vibe, yeah. Feel the same. So we have both rewatched the movie. I just rewatched it. You watched it last night?
I did, yes.
Did you watch it in cinemas when it came out?
Oh yeah, I did actually. Yeah, I did go and watch this in the cinema.
Cool. I don't think I did. I think I watched it at home later on. I don't remember. Yeah, I definitely watched it way later because I remember when it was being reviewed. You know, the critics hated it, the public loved it, and then it just took me a while to get around to watching it.
Was that like? Did you sort of deliberately avoid?
Oh
the,
no! Was it like? I do not care about what critics say at all. I do not care about public opinion. I just, it looked very action-y, and so I wasn't particularly bothered.
Yeah.
I thought that maybe, you know, as the Punisher series is to Daredevil, Venom might be to Spider-Man, you know, just like the grittier, grodier kind of version. And I'm not into it. I haven't watched the Punisher yet because I don't care for Frank Castle and gun violence, really. So I was like, I don't really know if that's going to be my thing. I'm only really used to cartoon Venom, so he's significantly more fucked up in the movies than in the comics. So, but when I got round to it, because everyone was calling it a rom-com, and I was like, well, that sounds like fun, like dark alien rom-com. Okay. And I saw a couple of clips there. I finally got around to watching it. So yeah, I really enjoyed watching it again. This time, you maybe did not enjoy it this time around?
No. Well, I've got to be honest. I didn't. Well, this is the weird thing. Okay, so I'll put like cards on the table, just to be honest with anyone listening. So I didn't like this film. The first time I watched it, I didn't like it at all. I thought it was, to be honest, I just thought it was boring. But like I actually am really looking forward to the sequel. And that's kind of like why I was interested to have a little talk about it. So yeah, I didn't like the film first time round. Watched it again yesterday, and actually, so this is weird, like I had some memories of it being, you know, having a few good one-liners and, you know, a couple of sort of like decent kind of visual gags and this kind of thing, and then I watched it again yesterday and I was just like, oh, it doesn't. So I actually liked it even less. I was almost I'm less interested in the sequel having watched it again. I shouldn't have watched it again. I should have done this whole talk on like, I should have just gone for memory,
vague memories alone. yeah
those vague memories of Tom Hardy and his funny voices, that would have been enough. It's like I should have. So yeah, I didn't really like it first time, and now I liked it even less second time.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not gonna lie, I wasn't quite as enthusiastic the second time around. You know, because it's like the first time around, you're experiencing everything for the first time, you're not entirely sure where it's gonna go. And then the second time around, you're like, right, you know, I know where it's going, get to the funny line or whatever, or gotta get through this bit before I like the next scene, or, you know, that kind of thing. But, yeah, I will always love Venom and Eddie's dynamic. I think they're so hilarious. They're really sweet.
Yeah, I think that's kind of, it's almost, that's sort of like the highlight in it.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, because I think I felt a little bit disappointed when I watched it, because like I didn't think it looked great, and I'm a big comic fan, but I'm not a comic snob. So I'm okay with the fact that they were doing a Venom film by himself. It's like taking him outside of the Spider-Man universe. It's like, yeah, that's, you know, fair do, see what they're going to do. Like Sony are desperately trying to claw back that Spider-Man investment that they've made. But I'm also not a massive fan of Venom in the comics anyway. So I went along to the first one and my expectations weren't that high. But, you know, a lot of people had kind of said, you know, oh, but it's really, it's so goofy, it's so silly, actually it's kind of like it's just ridiculous, and it knows it is, and it's just this kind of like crazy funny romp. And I kind of watched it, and I was just like didn't feel like it was, but there were a few moments where I get where that comes from. It's, you know, mostly the kind of, you know, Venom and Eddie in his apartment, and Venom and Eddie when they're like going to the convenience store and this kind of stuff, like those little moments kind of like the highlight, and it is that kind of, you know, Tom Hardy just being allowed to do what he wants in a sound booth and just like with his crazy voices and nobody telling him to stop.
Yeah,
like that's, those are the best moments in the film, but there weren't enough of them for me. But I do kind of feel like this second one, that's where I feel like they've actually leaned into that. So I'm hoping.
Yes, yeah. They released a clip a while, or like in the trailer or something, I haven't watched in a while, where they're like making breakfast together, which just sounds and looks hilarious. I actually remember a fan post being like, if Venom 2 doesn't have Eddie and Venom making an absolute mess out of breakfast to like some cheery pop music, I don't want to see it. And that was like years before the second one came out, and we were like, yes, it happened. which is brilliant.
That's what they've got to lean into, isn't it?
Into the rom-com cliches and the a bit of comedy cliche, because I think that's what really shone from the first one, and I hope they're listening more to that fan feedback than to what the critics thought, because I know the critics just kind of tanked it, and I guess you can kind of see why. You know, it's not a groundbreaking film, but like, they did Eddie and Venom really well. I mean, I can't compare it to the comics. I know I was talking about this with a friend today, and he said that his Venom is comic Venom and the messed up Venom. That's like the true Venom for him. And I was like, fair enough, but I really like this, you know. I like seeing characters do silly domestic things, and I like them getting to be happy at some point. And you get funny little moments like that, and I really want them to lead into the rom-com that they have created between the two.
I mean, I think that's what they're going to do. It's like, yeah. I mean, because like the critics did like slay into this movie, and I didn't really like it, so I kind of feel excited, deservedly so. I think in terms of like the plot and the characterization, it's like it's awful and it's all over the place, and there's like, you know, no one has any, like, there's no sense of anyone's motivation, like there's no sense of why anyone is doing anything. So there's no, like, genuinely, I was watching it again last night, and it's like, it makes no sense to me why this film was successful, because there's so much missing in terms of making it a film, other than people kind of like keyed into this, you know, the Eddie Venom dynamic. You know, this kind of, you know, this sort of, you know, the voices in Tom Hardy's head. And I'd hate to hear the actual voices in Tom Hardy's head. I think that would be terrifying. Like, that were way more scary than Venom. But I think because people did key into that, so it's almost like the film was a success, but not a very good film. But everybody liked this one little element of it.
Yeah.
And because they've got like Andy Serkis is directing it, and it, you know, I mean, he's not just like a sort of a great actor and performer, he's also a very, very good comedy actor, especially looking at some of his earlier stuff. So I feel like getting someone like Serkis in, you know, the second one's a much shorter runtime. I think they're going to be leaning, which is why I'm kind of excited for it. Like, yeah. I hated this one, but I'm quite excited for the next one.
Yeah, so you just want them to take the good bits and run with it. You know what? I was the other night, my grandparents were over, and that is pretty much the only time we will put actual TV on, you know, instead of like Netflix or whatever. And so we had the TV on, and I was like, well, I'm not just gonna sit and watch whatever was on, probably a gardening show or something. I just channel flicked for a little bit, and sort of most of Deadpool 2 was on, which is great. Deadpool 2 is a really good film. I really like it. And
it is a great film.
Rewatching Venom has, and recently having rewatched most of Deadpool 2, kind of reminded me of how when Deadpool 2 came out, Saw it with my dad in cinemas, and then when we came home that evening, rewatched the first Deadpool because it had been a while since it came out, and the first one is so dang dark. It's really quite horrible.
Oh yeah.
You know, he's getting tortured for like a solid 20 minutes. It's awful. And it's a good movie, and he's really good at Deadpool. And aside from, fridging Vanessa, the sequel is great. And it's like, I know they had to, it is an origin story, so it is gonna probably be darker. And they had to, I guess, probably make it a little bit more familiar to a conventional superhero story to get, favor, so they could really amp up the Deadpool shit, like you see him in, the video games and the comics. So now, kind of thinking about it, I'm kind of feeling like, I feel like the second one will be much better, because, even if I enjoy the first one, it's more like the elements of it that can be successful, like the visual effects and Eddie and Venom and stuff like that, that, it can come out of this gritty origin story and move into its own thing, like Deadpool 2 did, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think that makes perfect sense. And I think that's kind of, it's sort of why I'm a bit more optimistic about the second one. Because it's like, this one for me, there are so many elements of it that I don't like. But one of them is like, it's nearly 40 minutes until he actually becomes Venom. It's like, it's like over 35 minutes an hour and 50 something minutes. Like, it's almost a 2-hour movie, and it takes, nearly 40 minutes until he actually joins with Venom. Mm. But the problem is before that, like, there's...
Or at least not to me.
Oh, no, it felt like longer.
At least, but then again, don't take it from me. I'm time blind. I literally don't have a sense of time, so...
No, that's good. That's good. Well, no, but that's kind of because you enjoy the film, isn't it? It's like, I think this is the other thing as well. It's like, you can watch a 90-minute film, but if you're not enjoying it, it feels like it's 4 hours.
Yeah.
Or you can watch a 3-hour movie, and if you're loving it, it feels like 50 minutes. It's like, that's the ethereal nature of time that would need pleasure.
I mean, thinking about critically, and knowing that it is like half an hour, 40 minutes before he joins with Venom, it is then just essentially 40 minutes of shit investigative journalism that doesn't go very well before you get to the alien stuff,
This is kind of the problem. It's like, I was watching it again last night, and I was like, you know what? I actually felt like I would have preferred the movie if it had just started at the point where he's already at his lowest. Because I felt like the whole bit at the very beginning where he kind of fucks his life up, it takes ages. it takes ages, but it's like, he's really bad at his job, and he screws over his fiance in like a major way. Yeah. And then she gets fired, he gets fired, she dumps him, and then he's like, this guy and life, he ruined my life. It's like, he didn't do anything, Eddie, you did it all to yourself.
Yeah.
But I would have rather the film kind of started, his life is in the gutter, and give us a little bit of something to show. And also have, Riz Ahmed's character, just have him actually do something to, like, properly, like, ruin Eddie's life or something. It's like, yeah, so you've got, like, 40 minutes of, like, real drudgery and kind of, like, setting up the plot, and it takes so long. But Eddie's just useless. He's just not doing anything,
yeah,
but he's bringing all this misery on himself.
I think I kind of got two things on this. So I think the reason that I maybe didn't find this bit as boring as you did is because when I went to see Venom, I went into it solely because I wanted to see this rom-com that people were calling it. I wanted to see how they aimed into such a dark corner and accidentally hit rom-com, So I was watching it as if I was watching a rom-com, and that's how my So that's kind of how I am looking at it most of the time. And so this movie does start in quite a rom-com way. You know, it is just some dude. They're never very interesting in rom-coms, are they, really, when you get down to it?
No, that's it. If the movie was set at Christmas and there was a wedding right? in the opening sequence, you'd be right there, Richard Curtis
exactly,
territory.
Exactly, yeah. And so, you know, it does build very much like a rom-com. It's all going well, he does a selfish thing, it all goes to shit, and then, you know, you get this unlikely duo, blah, 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 blah. And so, you know, I guess I was kind of expecting that sort of build. I do like her. What's the character's name?
Michelle Williams. It's, is it Annie or Anne?
Yeah.
The character name.
I really like her. She comes across a bit, you know, I guess kind of MJ, you know, like a little bit... like a slightly old-fashioned, you know, get the girl type of love interest. You know, she kind of looks like that. You know, she looks like an MJ kind of type, but
she definitely looks like she's been lifted out of a '60s comic book.
She does, but I like that they established in the beginning that, you know, she is really successful and not just in a girl boss way, you know, she seems pretty real, and she genuinely is in love with Eddie, even though he is way below her league. And that's quite sweet. And then he fucks it up, and I like that they don't have a huge argument or drag it out or anything, because sometimes when things like that happen, it's just, no, it's done with, you know? And I kind of like to see that more. I don't know, I relate to that easier. I don't like arguing, and I'm fed up of seeing straight people argue, you know? Not that we can call Eddie straight anymore, but, like... but, you know, I'm just... As a queer person, I'm kind of fed up with it. So I quite liked how they did the relationship. And also that she treats him like a person afterwards. You know, like, he's an idiot, 100%, and he fucks it up, and it is his fault. You know, but, like, when he tries to apologize to her, she's just like, alright, not now, let's just make sure you don't die, okay? And he's just like, okay.
See, I kind of agree with the snap. I quite like the sort of the snap, and it's done.
Yeah.
But for me, I almost feel like there's a little something missing in between. Like, I like the fact that when he turns up and he's basically sort of dying in front of her and her new guy. I quite like the fact that she sort of, you know, looks after him. She doesn't kind of like, she isn't a dick to him.
Yeah, because...
But I feel like there's a little something, not necessarily in terms of their relationship, but in terms of the narrative of the film. I feel like there's something missing in between the breakup, and which is why I kind of would have liked it to start, you know, after, you know, post breakup. But I know what you mean. It's nice that they're not just arguing.
It does
sorry,
no, but it's I think that the other sort of thing I was gonna say about the beginning is that we're supposed to believe that Eddie is this really good investigative journalist, that people like him, that he has a reputation of being a honest and hardworking reporter. You know, he gets to the issues that people really want to hear, and he asks those awkward questions. Like, we know people like that in real life, you know? People know what that kind of reporter is supposed to be. You know, we've seen those kind of interviews where interviewers do not back down from those difficult questions that, you know, politicians or whatever want to gloss over. But, like, I just... As much as I like Eddie, they do not do a good job of, you know, making me believe that that's what he is. You know, he doesn't really have much of a fall from grace, because all we see of his reputation is, like, a shitty montage in the beginning. Where he looks, like, equally scruffy in, like, each report he does. And, like... We don't really see any, like, major effects of his journalism. We don't see that he has like a bad reputation with criminals because he's digging stuff up or anything like that. You know, I feel like the fact that he loses his job and is determined to get to the truth, I feel like that is put quite secondary, you know, or it's kind of just shoved aside, whereas that is his supposed to be his main motivation.
I think that's the problem with the film in general, for me at least, is that everyone's motivation is so loose and undefined, and it's like this huge long, you know, kind of like intro, you know, 30-40 minutes of kind of establishing who everyone is at the beginning, but it doesn't really establish who everyone is. And yeah, it's like if Eddie is as good as he is meant to be, and if he's as hard hitting and as kind of like gets to the truth as he's meant to be, then I keep forgetting Riz Ahmed's, it's Carter, isn't it? But the bad guy, the villain, he wouldn't have agreed to have an interview with him because Eddie would have this reputation. He'd know he has this reputation. He just wouldn't have an interview with him. But he does have an interview because Eddie Brock in this, he's meant to be like Lois Lane level. Yeah. But he comes across as like a vlogger. And he's just kind
of
like,
particularly with there the with low quality camera. of that like, yeah, reel that we got, like, at the beginning, it just looked bad, you know.
If it's this idea that he's some kind of like, you know, almost like, you know, guerrilla gonzo reporter that's kind of like getting in the dangerous places and has to shoot everything with a GoPro because he's, you know, scared for his life, and but they don't really establish that. It just seems like there's a guy with a cheap camera goes to industrial estates and kind of goes, they're pumping chemicals into the river.
Turn it's the
like,
frickin' frogs gay. Do you understand me? Sorry.
It's just and it's fall from grace, and it's like little tiny things that don't quite make sense to me. And it's like,
and it's
I think,
sorry, go on.
No, I was just gonna say, it's like I feel like the biggest problem I have with the film is that in order to enjoy it, in order to get anything out of it, or even to make anything of it, you have to kind of wholesale put a whole headcanon of interpretation on top of it.
Yeah.
And that's the problem I have. It's like there are so many little moments and little steps. Like, I don't mind, you know, like lots of films have little gaps, or they leave things to the imagination, whether on purpose or through sloppy script writing, and that's fine, and we do kind of like fill in the gaps, and sometimes we play around with headcanon because we kind of, you know, we interpret things in a certain way, or we want to enjoy them in a certain way. But this film, everything about it, you have to make up everything. Like why the villain is doing what he's doing, we have no clue. We get nothing as to why he's doing what he's doing, other than he's the baddie.
Yeah, so we get sort of told that he's rich and he wants to live off of Earth because environmentalist science shows that the Earth is going to be inhabitable within a few decades or something.
That's it.
And it's like, okay, that's like believable, but you just told us that. You didn't show it, you know? Like, you didn't show me that this dude is slightly unhinged and obsessed with space, you know? Like, you didn't show the part of him that's like, fuck you commoners, I'm gonna live in space, you know? We didn't see that. All we saw was him being rich, killing people through his experiments, and then getting what was it, Riot? The other symbiote's name?
I think it was, wasn't it?
Yeah.
There's so many of them. It's like Tinky Winky Poe. I can't remember which one it was now. But this is the problem as well. It's like when he finally joins with the symbiote at the end, it doesn't make any difference to him because he starts the film at 11. It's like he starts the movie, you know, murdering people and not giving a shit. And, you know, there's that brilliant scene. I don't even know what it's meant to say. There's that scene where he's doing a tour with some kids at the beginning. And one of the kids sort of says, "Oh, excuse me, mister, to ask a question." And the teachers are like, "Shush, shush, no." And then he does this little speech of like, "No, no, it's okay. It's good to ask him questions. Don't let anyone tell you you can't ask questions."
And then
he tells them to leave. He doesn't even answer a question. It's like,
what were you trying to say with that? Like, you know?
Yeah, what are you doing?
I get they were supposed to be bringing something up there, because then he immediately silences Eddie. It's like they were going for something, but like, what was it? You know, was it just that he's a hypocrite? Like,
I think it's just that he's Mr. Bad Guy monologue. You know, there's a point later in the film where he starts monologuing, like he starts talking about biblical stories and allegories, and it's like, come on. It's like, I was expecting a scene where he, you know, has a bath and listens to some Wagner.
Yeah.
It's like there's nothing to it. So when he joins with the alien at the end, he's just the same. He doesn't get any worse. He doesn't get
any
crazier.
And also, like,
he's just kind of like,
how is Riot an ideal match for this guy? You know?
Well, this is,
because, like, the idea is that, you know, Venom and Eddie are like that one in a million, right? You know, that's meant to be the idea here. You know, that's what we're meant to feel, is that this bizarre duo have managed to find each other, and that works. And, like, Carlton Drake's struggle through the whole thing is he cannot get the right fit for his, you know, his goal of living in space and getting away from this planet we fucked up. And so, like, surely it would have been better to have, like, Riot is super powerful, you know, don't get me wrong, he could definitely just, I guess, squish Carlton into submission. But, like, I feel like we should have seen them struggle. You know, if you take out, like, you know, that first half an hour and then, you know, maybe not extend the fight, but, you know, definitely have moments where Riot and Carlton are struggling to stay together because Riot is probably just killing Carlton. You know, their goals line up, but I like the idea better that they like, physiologically do not match. And so they can't do it together.
This is it. It's kind of the one of the problems, again, for me, and I'm not consciously trying to shit all over it, because I know you enjoyed it. But, like, another one of the problems for me is this, is the story elements that get dropped when they're no longer needed. So it's like, so there's this whole concept, like, the whole, you know, we have a whole massive chunk, you know, first hour of the movie, further in fact, where Carlton's trying to find, you know, the perfect match. He can't find a match, all these people are dying, he doesn't care. You know, Jenny Slate's character, even she dies, you know, everyone's dying, the symbiotes can't connect with anybody. Then Eddie, it's this one in a million. But then a little bit later, when it's convenient, Venom can also join up with a dog, and then can also join up with Michelle Williams with, like, no real problems. And the problem with Riot is, like, at the very, this is the kind of script writing that really pisses me off.
No, go for it.
So the ship lands, there are four symbiotes in it, Riot escapes.
Mm-hmm.
So the other symbiote, was it four or was it five? How many it was?
It's
the other
four,
symbiotes
yeah.
get taken to life. They get taken to Carlton. But the fourth one walks off and then goes and gets on a plane and travels all the way back.
Yeah, there was absolutely no reason for all of those scenes with Riot. Like,
it makes no sense. It's
there,
like,
was no
Riot would actually have been better off if he just, like, stayed on the van.
Yeah.
And it's like, and he wanted to get to Carlton. He wanted to get to him, to join with him. It's like, why is he going such a long journey? It's like, you'd have been there in, like, 3 days if you'd stayed with your mates.
Yeah,
no sense.
Like, I get the idea, it's like, you know, it's attempting to build the threat of Riot. That's what they were attempting to do with all these scenes. But, like, it's pointless. I think it would have been more effective, you know, maybe if, you know, the paramedics or whatever on the site had watched Riot, you know, kill that astronaut, and, you know, watched him, like, have, like, a strange Caesar alien goo comes out of him and seems to just, you know, disappear. And they, what if they, you know, I think this would have been better, instead of all those stupid scenes walking and killing people and, you know, getting on planes and shit. If maybe, like, if Riot had just hidden on that guy's body and just rode with, you know, rode back to life for an autopsy, because they definitely would have autopsied him. Like, there is no way they wouldn't have.
Yeah.
And so,
absolutely,
I feel like it would have been more effective had Riot ridden in, because that's really sneaky, you know? That's kind of smart. And if he's meant to be this team leader, you know, and he's seeing, ah, they've got my guys, you know?
Well, that's
I'm going where my guys exactly are going. It. Not just, I'm going to rip off this guy's badge and go find it. What's he going to fucking Google it, I guess. You know? Like, he must have. You know? Yeah, like, there is no signpost for the Life Foundation in this, no. in Malaysia. You know? So, like, how did he get to San Francisco? Riot's just there fucking Googling it. It would have been funnier if they'd shown that. But, like, they try and show Riot as, like, this brute, right? But he's
yeah,
a team...
Yeah, force of nature.
Yeah, but he's also... He's a team leader. He's not just a brute. He's also got to be some kind of smart.
Yeah.
Venom's meant to be a total loser, and yet we're led to believe that he's, like, sneakier.
I think that the... Like, you're bang on the money. It's like, and I think that it would have been a stronger and more interesting narrative, and it would have echoed Eddie and Venom more interestingly.
Mm.
If Riot had come back, and if Drake had been slightly less murderous, if
yeah.
Drake was, like, you know, more of a kind of a skeezy, you know Elon Musk kind of guy,
yeah.
you know, and then he joined with Riot and then becomes more unhinged and more crazy and more murderous, and Riot basically is trying to, you know, find hosts for his team and trying to get the ship ready so that he can go. That would have been a more interesting narrative.
Yeah, because then
and
you could have
had some parallels between the good guys and the bad guys.
And it also would have made their motivations more clear, because they both want to go to space to survive.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, without the rest of planet Earth. You know, Carnage wants to destroy Earth, Carlton wants to get away from Earth because we fucked it up and he doesn't care about anyone else. And so while Riot and this, you know, this botched merging of the two of them, because I'm still not vibing with the fact that they're a match, you know. I think it was just short enough of a time that it didn't kill him. So
I think that's
it would have been better for, like, over the course of the movie, you know, it while Eddie and Venom are figuring out how they work together, like, Carlton is, like, fighting to stay alive and to get to space before Riot kills him, and, like, Riot also needs him to be the face so they can both get on that fucking ship. And he can't do that if he kills the guy in charge, because it would have been great if he'd have been like, that's the guy in charge, I gotta go for him. Goes for him, realizing, shit, I might kill this guy before we get on the ship, you know? Like, and then it becomes a race against time, and it's like, it actually has clear motivation.
Yeah, and you can have moments of Riot kind of, like, you know, like he separates so that Drake can kind of, like, you know, regain his strength a little bit. There is a far more interesting film in there.
Yeah, and I think that is what people are looking for in the sequel, you know, is
definitely
the potential that we saw in this film. Yeah,
that's it. And I think, you know, so many, although I watched it and I didn't agree, so many people were kind of like, well, it's silly and it's goofy and it's cheesy and it's silly. I don't agree, or even if it is, it's not enough.
Mm.
But I genuinely think that's what they're going to be leaning into the. I mean, you say that, who knows? We might go away and watch the second one. You might hate it. I might love
it.
Or we might both just come away going, ah, no, that was shit. Who knows? Who knows?
Yeah. We don't know. Also, like, Dr. Skirth was just kind of underutilized, you know? Like,
yes,
you know, she, like, what is it about, you know, like, the science and Carlton that made her stay for that long, you know? Like, I know she went to Eddie when they started killing people, but, like, you know, what makes her want to stay that, you know, during, you know, from the moment where Carlton is like, nah, bring in the people right now. You know, personally, if I was told to do human trials that I knew were going to kill someone, I would have been like, no thank you, and left. What made her stay until she started seeing people dying?
That's it,
you know?
Isn't it?
It's like, and it's
she,
like,
she has some...
There's something there, but we don't know what it is.
Like, there's a... No, that's it. There's, you know, there's a, I mean, there's a very loose, you know, he kind of like, he vaguely threatens her kids at one point, I think, but it's just, it,
that
I,
just
again,
came across
you know
like
what?
Typical
I think,
villain shit, though, you know?
Well, that's it, isn't it? He's just like,
you know, like,
twiddling his moustache.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, some, you know, if we were going to go with that kids line, you know, that like an actual motivation would have been, I thought we were curing cancer, you know, maybe her kid has cancer, you know, like, you know, just something. To give
oh, you know
her
what?
A
just
reason
like,
to be there for so long.
As they see her coming home to her kids and her husband or whomever else, you know, or single mum, whatever it is. See her coming home to her children and then see the bald, you know, chief of security guy just kind of like watching
yeah.
her and she sees him. Or just something
see,
to sort
that
of
that would have been a lot more
show
shocking
us.
Than them just being in her office.
Yeah.
That was a bit shit.
Yeah. Especially because the film does kill a little girl.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah,
it's like
they weren't
I mean,
afraid to
totally
go there.
Totally, it's all over the place.
Yeah.
Yeah,
they're not
so
afraid
not
to go there,
it?
So why aren't they using... You know, I feel
yeah,
like...
Yeah, utilise it
the,
more.
The characters in this movie... Like, just, you know, thinking about it now and, you know, with how the, you know, how we're talking about this, because I feel like we're getting some interest and stuff. Like, I feel like with this potential version that we're kind of envisioning, like, I feel like they go to some places, or they attempt to go to some places that remind me of the Marvel Netflix series is that are proper dark, you know?
Yeah.
And I feel like there's so many, like, great, like, messed up characters with really in-depth motivations, and obviously you can't flesh out any character that much in a movie. It's a movie, not a TV show. But, you know, I feel like they, you know, shouldn't have been afraid, because Daredevil was definitely out by this point. Yeah. Must have been.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I think it, like, the whole movie kind of pulls its punches, I think.
Yeah.
You know,
oh, yeah,
you
yeah.
kind of, you feel like, Venom is eating heads all the time, but he makes like a couple of jokes about it, and then there are a couple of, you know, slightly lame sort of shots of him going and then cuts away. So it's like, it's not, the film almost steps into the realms of horror.
Mm-hmm.
It almost gets there, like some of the stuff with the early test subjects, the sequence where Venom is fighting in the lobby with all the smoke and stuff. It's like it almost gets into horror territory, but it just because obviously it wanted, you know, the PG-13, it wanted the wider market.
Yeah.
Which obviously I get.
Yeah, because had Deadpool come out by this point?
I can't remember.
Yeah, 2016
Deadpool,
it had come out.
I think Deadpool was out this.
Yeah,
of course it was. Yeah, yeah.
I've just got IMDb up now. Yeah, so I feel like there was enough in superhero movie media into 2018 for them to have taken a better dive into this, you know, looking back on it now, because they've got the foundation of these darker Netflix shows which were really setting a tone for the like level of quality and like drama we can get out of superheroes, and then Deadpool was showing how you can get a big audience to a higher rated superhero movie. Like, you're not getting the kids in, but you're getting people in, you know?
That's the problem though, isn't it? I think that because Sony want, they want a Spider-Man that they have full control of. That's basically
yeah.
what they've been, you know, grasping at. And it's like, and Venom, I think they saw that as a kind of a backdoor Spider-Man project.
Oh, you know what though?
You know, you can kind of like, you know,
what I've just seen. Venom is a 15.
Oh, was
yeah.
it?
Yeah. This is so weird. I'm getting really conflicting answers from the internet right now. So,
That's a very unusual thing to happen.
Well, yeah. Couldn't possibly happen. So I'm seeing 12A in the UK, PG-13 in the States, and then on IMDb it's saying a 15. So I don't know if they change it to a 15 on DVD.
Maybe, probably the DVD. Yes. Yeah, that happens quite often. Stuff hits a DVD, especially if it's got extras or you know, additional scenes and stuff. So yeah, I guess maybe it was I can't remember.
But yeah, I definitely feel like had they gone for the 15 straight off the bat, they could have gone harder with it, and it would have been better.
Yeah, I think the whole movie could. It's like I say, like my biggest takeaway watching it again yesterday was actually how boring I found. Like, it for me at least, it wasn't fun. I'm just gonna say, like, officially on the record, it's been raining like crazy here, and it's just calmed down. So if my entire, like, if everything I'm saying has been like accompanied with a kind of a and it suddenly stopped. That's what it is. It's like it's suddenly got super calm. It's probably a rainbow outside. But yeah, I feel like the whole movie for me, it wasn't fun enough. Mm. And whilst I never expected it to be a good movie, the kind of word of mouth that I'd got was that it was at least fun. And then it wasn't. So that kind of like disappointed me. And I guess because I wasn't having fun, because I was finding it boring, I just couldn't help but see everything wrong with it in terms of its narrative. But if they just gone a little bit more, if they'd had a bit more oomph to what they were doing, if they'd had the guts to make it more of a horror film or make it more of a comedy film, I probably would have enjoyed it despite everything that was wrong with it narratively. And that is genuinely what I'm kind of excited about for the second one, because I feel like in the second one they're going to make the film that people felt like the first one was.
Yeah. Yeah.
If that doesn't sound condescending.
No, yeah, I get that. Yeah, that makes sense. Because I feel like that's the difference between the first Deadpool and the second one. You know? Because that the first Deadpool is bad, it's very good, particularly compared to Venom.
But
I definitely feel like if you were describing Deadpool to people, you wouldn't describe it as, you know, a man dies of cancer and then gets tortured for 20 minutes. You know, it would be like, so Deadpool is this guy, you know, whereas when we talk about this movie, it's not a guy is a shit journalist for half an hour and then there's aliens. It's like, oh, there's this guy called Eddie and he pairs with this alien and they eat people. Like, you know, you're gonna you go for the bits that are actually interesting.
You get to the good bit.
And I feel like, you know, jumping into these sequels, they can get to the good bit now.
Yeah, and I think that's so often the way with, you know, especially with like superhero, with comic book stories, it's so often the way that you have to have, you know, you have to have the origin story. I mean, you can, you know, Marvel, you know, the MCU, obviously they've now got such a huge palette that they can get away and they can be a little bit cheekier and they can kind of like sideload characters and, you know, bring characters in without having to do a full on origin
story. Which is, I think, one of the things that makes MCU Tom Holland Spider-Man really nice is he doesn't have a gritty origin.
Yeah, and I think there's, you know, there's
you know,
a lot
we've seen Uncle Ben die thousands of times. We know who Spider-Man is, and it was just nice to not have to deal with that much grit. We get some very serious emotions out of him, you know, especially in Far From Home after Tony's death and stuff like that. However you may feel about Tony Stark, but, you know, we do get some good emotions out of him, and it's not just because Uncle Ben died. You know, I feel like we can kind of move past the gritty origin story and either just make a dark film or make a bright film. You know what I mean? Like, you can make your Into the Spider-Verse, you can make your Spider-Man Homecoming, or you can make, like, your Daredevil, you know? You can make it dark, you know? Or you know, it can be somewhere in the middle, but, you know, just pick a side, man. Don't just go down the typical superhero route. You know, I feel like we finally got to the point where we can maybe just shake off some of these conventions and make something interesting.
Yeah, I think like the MC, you know, obviously we're talking kind of like, you know, wider Marvel in this podcast, but like the MCU has done so much, and it's created such a wonderful world that it can kind of like shortcut and sideload. And, you know, Black Panther, you know, didn't, you know, he was just sort of introduced, sort of hits the ground running, and then has his own movie. It's the same with Spider-Man. Obviously, we've had a lot of Spider-Man movies to get us there. So especially with Spider-Man, we don't need to see Uncle Ben die again, because it's too emotional. But we don't need to see that again. So the fact that they could just like bring him inside, you know, that's great, and that's what they've got going for them. And I think kind of like the issue with Venom is that also you're basically just completely this is not comic book Venom at all.
Yeah,
really. Like, the, you know, the characters are nothing. Like, it's like, weirdly, it's like, you know, in the comic, without being boring about it, but in the comics, fundamentally, Eddie Brock is a bit of a git, and Venom makes him worse because Venom is evil. Whereas in this movie, it's kind of the other way around. It's like Venom is a bit of an asshole, but not really evil. And then he meets Eddie Brock, and Eddie Brock makes him a better alien. So it's kind of it's so removed from the comics that it might as well just have been called, you know, Edward and the Black Alien Goo. It's, you know, it's not Venom, really. It's like it's so far removed from being Venom. But you still have to... So it's not even like they can... It's weird. I feel like it's a film that spends a lot of time explaining itself without really explaining itself. It's like it uses all these weird little shortcuts. Like the Jenny Slate character, the assistant doctor... head scientist woman. Like we were just saying, you don't really get an idea of why she's been there or what she's doing, but we as an audience, we know that, oh yes, in movies like this, the bad guy always has a head scientist, and the head scientist always turns on the bad guy. So that's, they work on the assumption that we understand that. And it's the same with, you know, like Eddie and Annie at the beginning. It's kind of like, you know, oh yes, he fucked up and he did this terrible thing and now they've broken up, and then a few months later she's got a new boyfriend, because that's how these things always work. But there's so little motivation put into it whilst spending lots and lots of time on it.
Yeah, it's like they're trying to lean into these like comic book movie boxes, you know, they're trying to, you know, fill these roles and go through the story we kind of expect to see and subvert it slightly because it's anti-hero, whatever that's supposed to mean, and it's Venom, it's not Spider-Man, you know, but like at the same time they are still, because it's a Hollywood movie, it's an American movie, they spoon feed you everything. And it's really frustrating. And in this movie, they don't even try to do it visually. They just tell you. Oh, and it's God, like, no. You know, obviously, you know, one of the biggest rules you see of writing is don't tell, show it, you know? You know, don't say it, show it. And this movie is like, nope. You know, we've got the effects budget that we can just... let you enjoy the stunts, and then we'll just tell you what's happening. And, you know, come on, guys, we're beyond that point. You know, we can do better than this.
It's so painful. Well, it's like at the very beginning, it's like he's talking to his boss, and his boss is just like, Eddie, you're the best investigator or journalist.
You do your job like, well, but no one's above the network.
Show him. It's like,
and it's like, what about, you know, what happened to, you know, thinly veiled threats and you know, this guy's, you know, money and reputation looming over his head, you know, like where's the like subtlety and the subtext? It's just it all gets said out loud.
Yeah, everything, the whole movie is just, it's just telling you what's telling you who people are, telling you, but it still doesn't tell you enough. That's the worst thing. It's like at the bit, it's like Eddie's like talking to Drake at the beginning, and he's kind of like, "Yeah, so you were educated in England. You got English parents." It's like, Why is he English? But he's got an American accent. It's like, we don't need that's it. It's like, he's a villain, so he has to be English, but he's doing an American accent so that he doesn't alienate people. I don't get it. It's like, that's superfluous information. Have him British if you want, or have him American, or it's like, stop giving me information that I don't need. Stop telling me stuff which is irrelevant to the story and show me stuff that will make me care about what's happening. It's how I felt at like midnight last night.
Yeah, that's fair. I still definitely enjoy this movie. You know, it's not gonna become like, you know, I don't see myself rewatching it a lot the same way I do Homecoming, the same way I do House Moving Castle or Nine, or, you know, Prisoner of Azkaban. Like, those are my comfort movies. House Trainee Dragon, I will watch them over and over and over again. Even like Midsommar, I have, you know, terrifying, but like, I have the urge to watch it a lot because it's really good. You know, Venom is never going to become one of those. I like it, but it's, you know, it's not going to become like a comfort movie. Maybe the second one will, you know, maybe the second one will be, you know, funny enough and fun enough to, you know, just become a nice film to watch again. You know, I feel like this,
I think that
this Venom doesn't really have that much like desirable rewatch qualities to it. I feel like it's kind of similar to a, like, I know there are people that love Infinity War and Endgame and will watch them over and over again, but I watched Infinity War for the second time earlier at the start of this year and I hated it. Oh my god, there is no rewatchability to that film at all. Because the thing is like, that movie is all near misses leading up to a bad ending, right? Which then leads into the sequel where they have to try and fix it. It makes sense, but you can't just watch all of those near misses all over again. The all hope has been lost because you know that it doesn't work out in the end of that first movie. And so watching it again is like entirely futile, depressing, and frustrating. At least to me. And so it's just kind of like, I feel like if the sequel is going to be much more interesting, you know, the first one is probably going to lose its rewatchability. If you know what I mean.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, if it wasn't for the fact that, you know, we were going to come have this chat today, I probably never would have watched Venom again. And I may very well go and watch, you know, the second one in a couple of weeks from now, from when we're recording. I might love it. It might be the goofy, fun, crazy silliness that I want. And that might become a film that I can rewatch. But it won't make me want to rewatch the first one ever again.
And that's the same that happened to me with Deadpool. I like the first Deadpool movie. I really liked it when I first saw it. But having watched it after watching the second film, I was like, it's just not as fun. It's not fun.
Yeah, I think your comparison's a really good one as well.
You know, no one can say that Deadpool is a bad movie the way they can say Venom is a bad movie. But the trajectory of origin to sequel, I think, is going to be pretty dang similar. And I think that's actually pretty similar with Infinity War and Endgame. I feel like the, like, you know, the Captain America trilogy is very successful. Those are very rewatchable. Iron Man, I'm just not a big fan of Iron Man, so I can't really compare. But I definitely feel like Venom and Carnage have the same trajectory as Deadpool and Deadpool 2.
Yeah, I think it's, and I think you're right about, I love both the Deadpool movies. I love the first Deadpool film. Yeah. And I have rewatched it a fair amount of times, but it isn't as rewatchable as the second one.
Yeah.
And I think it is simply because, and this goes for a lot of origin stories, I think, it's simply because you just want to get to the Deadpool in the second movie.
Yeah.
And, you know, and there are, you know, like, not to, I don't want to get bogged down in too many, you know, other Spider-Man-y things. It's like, I'm a huge fan of the Sam Raimi movies. And I actually find Spider-Man 1, I find it actually one of the few very rewatchable origin stories for me. Because I do find it so much fun whilst he's, you know, he's doing his, you know, learning his way and becoming Spider-Man in the first one.
Mm.
But there aren't many origin movies that really have that, I think, because once you've had the origin, you want to get to the good stuff.
Yeah.
And as much as I love the first Raimi Spider-Man, I've watched the second one more than probably more than any other Spider-Man movie. Mm. Actually, what am I talking about? Superman, like the movie, Richard Donner, the first one. I mean, that's for me the most rewatchable origin movie. But then it doesn't adhere to our kind of like what we've now come to think of as an origin story.
Yeah.
Because as much as I love Marvel across the board, it's like the origin movies are very, because the comics are all kind of similar, the origin movies are kind of like protagonist, something bad happens, they get over it, they become a hero.
Yeah.
That's a very Marvel thing, and you can't ignore that. You can't pretend that it's not that.
Yeah.
Which is why what we were saying earlier about sideloading characters, bringing Spidey in, you know, without having to go through all that again is so much fun. Yeah, I can't see me ever watching Venom again.
I think, you know, we know what a superhero movie is now. And when we go to the cinema to see these films, on some degree, we do want to see that. You know, we want to see a superhero movie. But at the same time, the quality of cinema has gone up. It goes up every year, usually. Particularly with Disney's chokehold on the world and cinema.
That little white Mickey Mouse glove.
Yeah,
and one of his neck.
Yeah, and the things that do well are the ones that subvert it. You know, Civil War did so well because there wasn't a clear villain. It was, on the surface, it was, you know, heroes versus heroes. Who is right? We love these characters, and, you know, there's a righteous struggle, but it's so complicated now. Stuff like that. And I think in particular, Into the Spider-Verse does this spectacularly well, because, I mean, I know you said about the other Spider-Man film, but I think Into the Spider-Verse is the most rewatchable origin story ever. Ever. I think it's the best animated film of the decade. I adore it. I think it's one of the most just incredible films visually, and like everything is about it is just awesome. But what's funny about it is that they take all the typical parts of the superhero story and the comics, and they kind of just make fun of it because they want to dive into the good bit, you know, which is bringing the other Spider-Men together. You know, so we do get Miles's origin story, but, you know, it doesn't take as long to start seeing the effects of the multiverse and meeting other Spider-Men. You know, it's much better paced than Venom is. It's much more succinct because they had to find a clear way to introduce a pretty, like, complex idea and then a wide array of characters. You know, and I think they definitely would have struggled to have done that with like a brand new character. You know, it definitely helps that Spider-Man has a huge reputation, and is vastly popular. But what Into the Spider-Verse does so well is subvert all of those like origin story cliches. You know, it's like there's a mentor, the mentor dies, that's really sad, and you know, his uncle dies, that's sad, his uncle was the villain, that's sad, there's a one particular villain after him, you know, he struggles with his powers, he struggles with his confidence, you get all of that, but you get it in, like, the most hilarious way, like, the repetition of the let's start this again one last time, you know? And like, yeah. And everyone just being like, I'm Spider-Man, I got bit, this happened, now I'm here, you know? And it's like, just the repetition of that is like such a fun way of telling it, the story, and like simplifying the concept of this origin movie so that we can clearly understand each of these Spider-Men and why they're there. And it just, it's just such a beautiful subversion of a typical origin story that you get this beautiful film. And Venom could only dream of ever coming close to the energy that Spider-Verse created.
I forgot the fact that at the very end of Venom's credits, they threw a scene from Spider-Verse.
They did!
It's like, talk about tonal shit.
Yeah!
It's like, what?
Also,
but I think...
Yeah, sorry, go on.
No, sorry, I was just going to say, I think, like, what you're saying about subversion, that's exactly it. And it's, again, one of the things I'm so disappointed about with this film, when I first watched it, and watching it again just yesterday, is that kind of up until the MCU, superhero, you know, you can argue as much as you want whether the market is oversaturated, whether it isn't, whether it's just a phase, whatever you want. But up until the MCU sort of really kicked off, superhero movies came along, you know, there was maybe every couple of years there was a big one would come out. And so the fact that, you know, basically from like Superman in 1978, and then, you know, you get the Burton's Batman movie, and then you know, Spider-Man and all these kind of films, every couple of years there'd be a big superhero movie. And so the fact that you were getting, you know, like you were getting the origin story each time didn't feel as frustrating, because potentially there was a new audience. Every sort of like 5 years or so, you've got another set of, you know, kids have become teenagers and toddlers have become kids, and so you get this new audience every like 5 or 10 years. So the fact that we kept getting origin stories didn't feel as weighty and frustrating. And then of course the MCU kicks off, and there's constant superhero movies and superhero TV shows and superhero media kind of everywhere. And what I think Marvel have done, or the MCU has done, is it's kind of trained and educated the audience in the wider concepts of superhero movies. Which means that now they can subvert them. Yeah. And I think that they are, and I think it's a brilliant thing. But then you get a film like Venom where it feels like a superhero movie from the 90s.
Yeah, like we've gone
where
back.
A studio have just kind of, yeah, they've just kind of like grabbed any property that they could, and they've kind of like smack bang, you know, bit of action, bit of a bad guy, we do the origin story and let's go. And it feels like such a step backwards after having so many interesting MCU movies and Deadpool and, you know, everything else, everything we've got on TV at the moment. It just feels like such a step backwards, such an old-fashioned kind of superhero film.
We were saying earlier that what's her name? Oh my god, her name will not stay. Is it Anne? Annie?
I think it was Anne, wasn't it? It's Anne or Annie.
I feel really
or baby
bad
that
I don't remember, because I do like her, but you know, she looks the part. She looks, you know, she looks just so kind of typical of, you know, the hero's love interest. You know, even if, you know, she isn't the hero's love interest for most of the movie, and she has stopped becoming the love interest, she fills that role, and she looks just like Lois Lane, just like MJ, just like Gwen Stacy. You know, as strong as these women can be, they are written in a very typical way, and she may be a strong woman, but she just looks like every other superhero love interest, I think does a discredit to this film. It's another mark against them. I feel like what they were hoping is that the fact that it was Venom and the fact that it was these violent, dark aliens would be enough of a subversion that they could throw a basic plot underneath it. I think that's what they were going for.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Because the tagline was like, embrace your anti-hero or something like that. And it's like, look, just because he eats people doesn't mean the origin thing isn't overdone now. You know?
Yeah. He's not this kind of like crazy subversive anti-hero, because at the end he decides he wants to live on and save Earth because he just likes it. He just like he thinks Eddie's quite fun, and then he looks out at San Francisco and he kind of goes, I like this place, it looks quite pretty. Okay, let's save the Earth. It's like, what?
And you know what, that, you know, that could be a fun thing, you know, like we're supposed to have the idea that Eddie is a good person because he is this investigative journalist that does the hard-hitting stuff, you know, by virtue of his job he is meant to be a good guy. They show him as scruffy, and you know, I feel like they try to visually present him as morally gray when he's not. He's a good guy, you know? And so him wanting to do good things throughout the movie is not an anti-hero. You know, I'm so fed up with that phrase, because it gets thrown around so much, particularly...
Oh, it doesn't mean anything.
I have no idea what... You know, at first I was like, anti-hero means something, right? You know, like in the beginning, you know, you could kind of throw that word around. But now we've had so much development on characters like Bucky and Loki, that it means nothing. It literally means nothing. I don't know what you're trying to say with the word anti-hero. Like, having rewatched Venom, the word anti-hero now just really annoys me. I'm like, you don't actually mean anything with that. You know?
It's a non-phrase. It just gets lumped on characters like this to basically say, not Captain America.
Yeah, it's a...
That's right. It's not Superman.
It's like...
Not Spider-Man.
We've spent, you know, the MCU and stuff and other movies have, like, spent time trying to develop these characters into more fleshed out people. They are not squeaky clean. You know, they have moral dilemmas. They have conflicting motivations, like real people. And we spend all this time trying to humanize them and bring, like, you know, like the sort of the dark side of the story in, particularly with things like the Marvel series and stuff like that. And then, you know, the word anti-hero just implies that it is still all black and white, and that if you have a hint of something murderous about you or about your story, that you're an anti-hero, you're a bad good guy, a good bad guy. Like, what? What does it mean? What does it mean?
It's just marketing.
That's bad marketing.
It's just marketing.
It's bad marketing.
It's like, that's it. Like, they throw it at Venom. They say, oh, Venom.
He's such an anti-hero.
He's the anti-hero. And then it means a load of people go, you know, oh, yeah, I'll go and watch that. It looks really edgy. He's an anti-hero. You know, I'm not really into Iron Man, but, like, he's an anti-hero. And it's just like, it's just, it's bollocks, isn't it? It's like, you're right, we're beyond this. And the MCU, in no small part, has done a lot of work to kind of redefine. And also, it's like, even if we're going to take like a sort of a standardized term, you know, if we're going to say, okay, all right, officially anti-hero means ABC, even if we are going to take that concept that it does actually mean something, Eddie Brock is not an anti-hero. It's like the Guardians of the Galaxy are way more fucked up. Iron Man has, you know, got more skeletons in his closet. Captain America kills a shit ton of people without even thinking about it. Eddie is like desperately trying to not kill even the worst people, and he's so far removed from what you would conceive as an anti-hero if there's a sort of a box that you can put it in. It's just a meaningless term.
So I just looked up the definition, and an anti-hero is defined by the Oxford Dictionary as a central character in a story, movie or drama who lacks conventional heroic attributes. So it is essentially he's a superhero that doesn't, you know, look or come across as a hero. But that's not how they actually market it. They market anti-hero as a hero with something dark about them. You know, Venom is supposedly an anti-hero because he likes to eat people. Bucky is an anti-hero because he murdered people while he was brainwashed, which doesn't make him an anti-hero. No. That makes him a victim.
Just a victim.
And then, and stuff like that. And it's like, well, if you're going by that logic, Lex conventional heroic attributes, Iron Man is an anti-hero because he is a billionaire. His existence is inherently wrong and incredibly selfish. You know, like, you can't be a good billionaire. You are a bad guy by virtue of having so much money, you know? And
but that's the joy of the Iron Man character. It's like, it's the, you know, it's like the whole kind of like concept, the whole trigger of it, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like that he is an anti-hero. They kind of squandered it in the third movie, personally, but we're not talking about Iron Man
yeah.
movies. But like Indiana Jones is definitely an anti-hero because he's a sex offender. It's like all these kind of like characters out there are more of an anti-hero than Eddie Brock.
Yeah, Eddie Brock is just a normal hero.
He's this buff guy yeah. who goes around fighting injustice.
He's a good guy.
And then he gets alien superpowers and manages to tame the alien superpower so that he can save the world. It's like, what's anti-heroic about that?
Yeah, and also, like, Venom isn't that much of a villain. Really?
No, he's not very villainous at all.
No, because, like, he eats people, but that's because that's how his race survives. Morally, that means nothing to him. That's just like us, you know, eating rabbit or deer, you know? Like, morally,
yeah,
it means nothing to him.
When Eddie explains it to him, he's like, okay, I will only eat bad
yeah!
people.
It's like, he's so indifferent. And he's got this crush on Eddie, you know? And so he's like, okay, guess I won't eat the bad guys because it upsets you, you know? Like, and it's like, you're just a hero and his, like, indifferent friend that makes him badass, you know?
Whole film has a massive identity crisis.
It does. Sort of,
it's weirdly lazy. It's what I was saying. It's like, you know, you kind of watched it as a rom-com, and you know, in your brain you have to do so much filling in of the gaps.
Mm-hmm.
So like, someone can come out of it and go, oh, it's a brilliant rom-com. Someone else can come out of it and go, oh, it's a really dark story, and you know, about a schizophrenic. It's like, oh no, it's an exploration of you know, psychosis in billionaires. It's like, because you can just, it's so vacuous as a film that you can just put whatever you want on top
and
of
you
it.
You kind of have
because
to enjoy
so little
it
there.
You know,
I think that's
I'm
it.
Putting
I think
this rom-com reading on it so that I enjoy it. That's how I enjoyed the movie, you know. And when you
yeah,
when you
that's...
take that out, when you know, and now as, over this conversation, as we're looking at it like actually like critically as like a piece of media, you know, and taking away like the layers that we want to see in it and put on it, you know, there's not much going for it except for the effects and the actors and I, you know, the people that worked really hard on it, but the, you know, as a whole,
yeah. And it's a shame because, you know what, it's like we all indulge in a little bit of headcanon, and certain movies they leave things ambiguous and they allow us to interpret them, and sometimes it's fun to enjoy a movie on your own terms. It's like it's good to be able to do that. But if you're doing that, I like the film to also have its own identity and its own statement.
Yeah.
That it's kind of saying, you know, okay, so I am this film, and this is what I'm saying, and this is what I'm doing. And I can watch it and go, yeah, I know that's what you're doing, but I kind of feel like you're also doing this, wink, wink, in my mind.
Yeah.
But this film, it isn't doing or saying anything itself, so you have to. You're forced to put your own interpretation on it. And as soon as you take your own interpretation away, it just falls apart. Because
yeah.
It's just good guys and bad guys and a little bit of head eating that you don't see.
You know what? One thing that I do like about this movie, and it is related to headcanon and stuff, so that in you know, like, I don't know how deep you are into fandoms of any kind, but you know what fan fiction is, right?
Oh, well, yeah.
So, when it comes to fan fiction, there is a lot of slang that people use to describe things. I'm sure people have heard of ships before, you know, it's relationships, whoever you ship together, it's you think they will be a couple or whatever. And then there's things like fluff, which is like cute, happy things, like people hugging, people cuddling, people, you know, having a nice date, you know, that's kind of fluffy. And then there's another word that I love in particular, it's a trope that I adore called womp. I love this one. This is my favorite. So it is kind of a specific brand of hurt and comfort. It can be really dramatic, it can be kind of cartoony, but it is basically people being, you know, ill, injured, and then usually subsequently being looked after. And the word womp literally comes from someone like collapsing and hitting the floor, you know, womp. that's
the noise I make every time I
definitely
fall over.
You know, and so it's usually around the trope of someone like, you know, being exhausted, passing out, poison, that kind of vibe, and then, you know, waking up and being like, oh, what's happening, being looked after. And I love that trope. It is the majority of the fanfic I read, and I read a lot of fanfic. It's usually based around this concept, and I think this film is a wonderful source of some great womp. It's beautiful. Eddie spends most of the movie in, like, the grimiest hoodie, looking so dang ill. Like, and the way that his, like, when he gets separated from Venom with the MRI and then gets kidnapped by Carlton, like, his throat sounds, like, so sore. Like, you know, like, he sounds like he's just had something ripped out of him, you know? And it's just, like, it's not super dramatic. I don't care if it's not super dramatic. I quite like the kind of relatively lighthearted womp. It's just good hurt and comfort. You know, I like it. I liked it a lot. I like watching that. It was good. There was some good womp, and now I'm hoping for some good shenanigans in the next one.
Shenanigans would be great. That's what I was hoping and felt was lacking in this first one. So I'm well
Bring
up for some shenanigans.
Shenanigans.
I mean, Woody Harrelson, it's like, I always love a bit of Woody Harrelson.
Oh my god, though, that wig. Oh
no, I love it. I know, no. I mean, don't get me wrong.
See, I did not remember that post-credit scene at all until watching it last night. And I'm trying to think of what I mainly recognise Woody Harrelson from. It's not Now You See Me, but he's in like a similar role probably. I know him particularly from something, you know, and it's like, it's not as some dude in a shit wig drawing a blood on the cell wall. And I remember recognizing his face, and you know, in whatever I'm thinking of, he's not wearing a wig, so you know, he's just got his short hair. And then seeing him in the wig,
that's his real hair. Every other movie he's ever done has been a wig.
Yeah.
That at the end of Venom, that's his real hair.
It was fake. I cannot though that whatever they do with I've forgotten the name of Carnage's dude.
Oh my god, it's just gone out of my head as well. That's ridiculous. I've got some comics behind me, but I can't be bothered to look in them. I actually hate Carnage, which is another odd thing going into this next movie. I don't like the character of Venom either. I don't like Venom. I don't like Carnage. I don't like that whole gang of characters. I find them super lame and 90s and tedious.
Yeah.
But I did love the wig. I loved the wig because it does, because it looks like... It looks like he does in some of the comics. And I was just like, that's all right. You sold me there.
See, as someone who has not read a comic with Carnage in, I've only seen Carnage in, like, the Ultimate Spider-Man cartoon. And so you only see him as Carnage. I don't think you see the guy. I think you just see him as Carnage. Because I'm pretty sure there's an episode where, like, Carnage comes to Earth to try and bring Venom back or something like that in one of the cartoons. I can't remember. But it, you know... I don't remember him possessing someone, especially not someone with hair like that. And he just looked like, my first thought is like, creepy doll, is like Chucky vibes or something. I was like, I'm not, no.
Yeah, it's just this ridiculous, the it's Cassidy.
What's that? That's the guy, right?
Sorry, yeah. That's his name. Yeah, I'm trying to remember his proper name. It'll come to me. There will be people listening to this now who are massive Carnage and Venom fans who are like getting really angry. But I don't care. Carnage is a shit character. it's like they made Venom, who's like a shit bad version of Spider-Man, and then after a while they were like, that's quite popular, what should we do now? Oh, let's make a shitter, badder version of Venom.
Red and actually ruthless this time.
Yeah, they always make him red as well. It's like Hulk, let's go red. Venom, let's do a red Venom. but I'm hoping it's going to be fun. I think it will be fun.
I think it will be shenanigans. Let's pray for shenanigans.
Yeah, pray for shenanigans.
I don't know who's editing this, but I feel like we've talked for a while, so good luck. But I feel like we've had a great discussion. So I don't know what the hell you're going to try and cut from this. If anything.
I don't think you can cut anything from this.
I feel like we've...
Nothing should be cut. The people need to know how we feel about this movie. They need to know. It's like we are Eddie Brock in this situation. Yes.
The people like, have to know.
The people need to know. They got to know about they the movie. It's not so good.
Also, I don't really know if we get many comments on the podcast. I'm not really in touch with the analytics and the social medias, but if anyone does want to hear us collect and read out Venom headcanons, I will gladly do so. I think that would be a great bonus episode of just us.
That would be
discussing your wildest Venom headcanons. that feels like great. The natural successor to this episode.
I would love to know how different people enjoyed this movie. Like what they had to add in, what things that people went with to help them enjoy this movie. I think that'd be fascinating.
Let's
to find
do it.
Out.
Bonus episode 616 Venom headcanons. Hit us up. We want to know. Call in now,
guys. Send your letters to PO Box 402.
Or call Hampshire. Us up on 0800 Venom.
That should be 555. Yeah. It's always 555.
In America, yeah.
555 616 yes. Venom.
Perfect. All right. Yeah, we should probably wrap up before we make any more wild promises, although I do really want to do this. Where can the people find you?
They can find me. Twitter is always the best place to go to first. I'm Fourducks, Fordukks. Whatever I'm doing, I usually kind of like promote it out there. I push it out there, put links and everything. And then on the We Made This Network, like I said at the top, stick my name in, Robert Turnbull, and I'm cropping up on more and more things. I've got something a little bit exciting lined up for Christmas, part of the Real Talk. I'm guesting on other people's podcasts as well as co-hosting the You Have Been Watching sitcom podcast.
Awesome. I have been Carpenter Lockwood. You can find me on the various social medias at vintage_T3A. That's Vintage T. I star on the sci-fi comedy drama podcast, Keo and Maxie's Adventures in Everything. The third episode recently came out, and it's all great stuff. Please give us a listen. You can also find me on the Nightmare Portal, which is an urban fantasy drama podcast. And occasionally you can find me guesting on Chasing Tales and Irish Lassie on Twitch. Thank you so much for doing this episode with me, Robert. I didn't expect to have quite so much of a blast doing this episode, but I feel like we've had a great time.
I've had an amazing time. Thank you. Especially because I didn't really like the film. I was like, oh god, is this going to be just me kind of like moaning about a film? But I feel like we've really got to the root of who Venom is.
And now the people know. Spread the word.
Now they know. Can't take it back. Can't take it back.
It's canon.
Said now.
It's canon.
It's canon.
It's 616 canon. Thank you for joining us on another episode. And remember, we are part of the We Made This Podcast Network. Please subscribe to Podcast 616 and give us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. And if you want to help out our network, please consider supporting us on Patreon. You can go to patreon.com/wemadethis. Venom is not all we are discussing, so we'll give you a taste of what you might have missed on the network in just a moment. We'll see you next time on Podcast 616, where there will be carnage.
Elsewhere on We Made This.
We dig music.
I like it. I just like it less than Enya.
That was, ladies and gentlemen, the moment where Ian's credibility just disappeared.
I had no problem with that. No problem with that.
It's the craziest opinion we've ever had on the show.
It's definitely going to be the most controversial one, I think.
Yeah, it's fine. Because, you know, that's because I'm not moving like a tortoise full of rigor mortis. Which is possibly one of the worst rhyming couplets.
Shipwrecked and Comatose, a Red Dwarf podcast.
Yeah, and I think as we're on a Red Dwarf podcast, something we always gush about is the model work of the first six series of Red Dwarf. And that is outstanding, and it is better than this. But for 1967, The model work in this, I don't see where you could say it was anything other than good quality.
Yeah, it was perfectly acceptable, I think, for the time. It was fun, you know. It was fun. I mean, is it the best example of the model work at the time in these films? No, but I certainly wouldn't say it's particularly shonky in any way.
Frame to Frame.
With this being done by Bear McCreary, who I believe you may have interviewed, Sean.
I have. He's brilliant.
What did you make of this score?
I really like it. Bear McCreary is a fabulous horror. I mean, he started on The Walking Dead, so that's really how he got his name, with lots of very interesting noises and ambient textures and things. And yeah, on the first Happy Death Day score, he actually used he's got a young daughter, and he used her vocals and distorted them and processed them to create that creepy.
Check out all of these shows and more on the We Made This podcast network.
Robert, are you ready to record Venom 2, Carnage?
Yes, I am very ready to do that.
Oh no, bad Robert Venom, we are not doing this.
Yeah, no. No, this is how I shall be doing the next podcast.
We only do the Venom voice on the bad podcasts. The very bad podcasts.
No, this will be good, and I shall be doing the Venom voice for the whole thing. I shall eat some heads. Watch the movie.
No eating heads. No eating
and then
heads.
I shall do my whole podcast like this. Okay, well, I sound a bit like Cookie Monster, so maybe I'll just eat some cookies.
That's what I was thinking.
I'll just eat cookies. Head-shaped cookies. I'll compromise. Om nom 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 nom.